Nothing spikes the heart rate quite like seeing a headline saying you need $1 million to even think about stopping work one day. This week's listener is 47. The kids are nearly out the door, and suddenly the future feels very close. And while some days she thinks she's on track, other days she's convinced she's already blown it, especially after hearing horror stories about the cost of retirement villages and aged care. So, it's time to figure out what you actually need without spiraling into worst case scenarios. So welcome to Ask the Experts, where each week, people working in the money world answer your questions to get the answers you need right now.
Making Sense is proudly supported by Heartland Bank, a New Zealand bank here to help you make the most of your money.
So in the hot seat, Will White from Heartland Bank, are you ready for the letter?
Sure am, let's go.
Cool, all right. Hi, Francis. I'm starting to feel like I'm winging it with my money and it's freaking me out. I'm 47. The kids will move out soon, so I'm trying to properly plan my own future. Some days I think I'm doing fine. Other days I see a headline about how much you need to retire and my stomach drops. One website told me I'd need just over $1 million. I don't have $1 million. I don't even have a plan for how someone gets $1 million. A friend of mine moved her mum into a retirement village last year, and it sounded like a financial nightmare. Complicated contracts, big upfront payments, lots of extra fees, and I talked to other people about it, then started hearing horror stories about how hard and expensive it is to get into a good aged care facility. Now I'm worried I might not be able to afford it if the time comes. I know I need to make a plan. I just don't know where to start without accidentally making everything worse. So how much do I actually need? Have I missed the boat on saving enough? Should I be thinking about downsizing as soon as the kids move out? Or is that something you only decide when you absolutely have to? I'm not looking for a luxury retirement. I just want to enjoy the time I get and not be a burden on anyone.
It's a lot there.
There's so much anxiety coming out of this letter. Let's start with the first big fear, I think. Do people really need $1 million to retire?
How long's a piece of string, right? So potentially, depending on how you want to live and what quality of lifestyle you want in retirement when you plan to retire, will all factor into how much money you need. $1 million is a very scary number. But there are just so many variables. So it really depends on what you want to achieve. Let's go back a step. 47 is not old. There's still plenty of time to solve this challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. And where do you think people can start? As you say, you know, how long is a piece of string? And it really is so dependent on the life you want, the lifestyle you want to build. Where do you think is a good place to start to figure out a more you size goal? And then sort of working backwards from there to be like, okay, how do I figure out how to get there?
Well, I think you need to look at how you live now. So you've already got a good indication of, you know, do you live frugally? Do you, you know, do you have an outsized life where you're taking 3 international trips a year? Your view on how you want to live is probably not going to change in retirement versus how you want to live now. The thing that will change is your ability to fund those things. So are you willing to make choices that mean you're going to live differently in retirement? And what does that mean for how much you need to save? And what are the other thing I'd say is financial advisors are not for the rich. They're for the many. Now, a lot of people get turned off because I'm not paying that kind of fee. You actually need to not worry about the fee for a minute and go, am I going to get an outsized return over the next 15 years by paying for specialist advice compared to try to do it on my own? 9 times out of 10, the answer to that is going to be yes. So don't try and do all of this yourself.
100%. I mean, I think about in terms of, you know, I for starters think that a financial advisor is often less expensive than people expect, depending on the one you go for. But also when you think about in terms of, you're making decisions worth several thousand, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars. How much would you pay to not lose that money? You know, it's actually a pretty small payment for that much return, I think.
I think, you know, look at property. That's why we have so many people paying to use buyer's agents these days, because we've got over this idea that it's you're paying a fee for a service. The return from that is going to get you better terms, better conditions, maybe a better price. The same principle needs to apply to trying to understand your retirement. We don't do this all day, every day. We're not the experts. I wouldn't try and fix my own car if something went wrong. I'm not a mechanic. I'd pay for someone to help me. Yeah, apparently when we get to a retirement, we're suddenly all experts, and unless we're rich, we don't need to pay for advice. That's just not accurate. You will do damage to your plans in the long term by trying to do this on your own.
Yeah. No, I would really agree with that. When people are thinking about their retirement, do you think there are any areas that people forget to factor in the costs? Any costs that can often be missed?
Healthcare is probably the biggest one. So, we are lucky in New Zealand. Obviously, there is a public health system that if you need urgent medical attention, you will get it. But a lot of people have private health and private health that may be provided by their employer. Obviously, at some point, that's going to stop once you've retired. Are you going to continue that? The older you get, the more expensive it is. If you choose not to continue it, and then something does happen and you find yourself needing to avail yourself of a private system because of whatever's happened, you can't afford to be on a waiting list. Yeah, that can run into the tens of thousands of dollars if something's happened. You know, the second biggest reason for people getting a reverse mortgage is to pay for healthcare costs, because a hip needs to be replaced, or there's aggressive cancer treatment that is required that, whilst available on the public system, it's a 6-month wait. So people come to us and go, if I can up my chances of survival, frankly, by doing it in the private system, then I'm going to. And then again, what's the quality of life you want? Are you happy with a domestic holiday once a year? Or actually, do you want to go overseas 2-3 times a year, like maybe you've been doing whilst you're working? These are the things you need to sit down and work out. And also talk to your family as well. Are you downsizing? Is there the option for you to put your funds together and buy a property with the kids and all live together? Some kids will be like, over my dead body, but for a lot of people that works.
Yeah.
Do you plan to move into a retirement village? Most villages are 55 years plus. So, this idea that you only move into a retirement village when you're in your mid-60s, no, that's not accurate. And actually, that could solve you a lot of problems down the track if you make some of those decisions today. And a lot of people just rule that out and go, I would never live in a retirement village. My family home is where I'm staying. And again, that's fine. But what's your plan for maintenance? The likelihood is you're going to need someone to come in and do that. And all of that comes with a cost.
Making Sense is proudly supported by Heartland Bank. If you're looking for specialist banking products, this is their area. They're a New Zealand bank which offers savings and deposit accounts, reverse mortgages, car loans, and rural lending. They're also the bank chosen by 26,600 Kiwi to unlock the value in their homes through a reverse mortgage, so they can stay in the place they love and enjoy a little more freedom in retirement. Heartland Bank's lending criteria, fees, and charges apply. It's surprisingly complicated, actually, the finances of it. And yet, I look at some of these retirement villages. We were literally just driving past one on the weekend. And I said to my husband, actually, when the time comes, that looks pretty good. Like, those houses are nice. It's all in this sort of community feel. And the kids are often off working, raising their family. They're not going to be there every day. You've got people around you who are in a similar stage of life. You have that community right there. And I think back to, university halls of residence and things like that, where you were surrounded by your friends and all hanging out together. That was one of the most fun times of my life.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
As soon as I'm 55, roll me in, right? I've done numerous visits we have a product where we facilitate customers that want to move into a retirement village, but it's maybe not the right time to sell the family home. So we do financing that means customers don't have to wait, they can move. So as part of that product, I've gone and experienced quite a few, and they're great. I mean, three meals a day, you're chatting to friends that you've made, you've got communal gardens, depending on the type of villa or townhouse you buy, there's space for the grandkids to come and stay with you. So it's a really interesting option. And again, retirement villages and aged care are two very different propositions.
Yes.
Retirement village is helping you to get the most out of your retirement. Aged care facilities are looking after you because you've lost the ability to look after yourself, or your family can't look after you.
That's right.
So the distinction between the two, this idea that, well, I'm not going to move into a retirement village because I'm only in my 60s, actually you're surrounded by a whole lot of other people that are in their 60s and don't want the hassle and maintenance upkeep, and they want to live their best life. And, you know, a lot of these are lock and leave. You want to go away for 3 months, you lock the door, the village will look after the property on your behalf, and then you come back, it's been, you know, cleaned as if you never went away. For a lot of people, that's pretty good. That sounds like a good option. It certainly does for me. I'm like, well, why wouldn't I consider that? So again, what do you know instinctively that you're going to rule in and rule out? Because some people will just go, I'm never living in a retirement village. Okay, well, then you've ruled that out. So what do you now need to consider to make sure that your retirement will be a comfortable one?
Yeah. And in this letter, she's saying she would like to keep the options open to that, but she is worried about the finances of it. She's heard it's complicated. Now, this is definitely something I've had people message me about before. Retirement villages can be a little financially complicated. Like, what do people need to think about on the money side of things?
So effectively, for retirement villages, you're buying a right to occupy. Obviously, retirement villages are expensive. So most people would need to sell the family home in order to facilitate a move. The other thing you need to think about is if you're moving into a retirement village that doesn't have that aged care facility, then you're going to have to move again. So what I would say is if you're looking, look at full service options where for the rest of your life, if you choose to, you can stay in that same village. Don't underestimate how distressing change can be when you're in your 70s or your 80s. You're being forced to move because you suddenly need medical attention. Have a long-term plan.
So you can stay part of that community that you've built up.
That's right, yeah. And it will save you money over time, because if you end up having to move, you're replicating all of those costs again. And you're waiting for the market to meet you where you are.
And they mentioned as well, speaking of that, the idea of downsizing the family home. And now they're clearly not sure on timing. So is there maybe a graduated idea of you could downsize now to a smaller house, think about going to a village later, you could downsize now, go to a village straight away? Like, what sort of things impact the timeline of how you would do that?
You can get that piece of string again. It depends on your personal circumstances. A lot of people would like to downsize, but financially they can't afford to, because if you go to one of the, you know, the big five banks and you say, I want to borrow money from you in order to facilitate moving, i.e. I want bridging finance, if you're retired, the bank's going to go, well, how do you propose that you're going to service this loan? Most customers go, well, I don't need to service anything. I'm sitting on, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not, you know, $1 million of equity. I can use that. Unfortunately, that's not the way the banks look at it. If they're going to lend you money, they have a requirement that you can service it each month. So a lot of people that do want to sell the family home and move into an apartment, as an example, sounds like a great idea on paper until you work out quite quickly that no one's willing to lend you the money. Now, if you happen to still be working, you're in the workforce, even if it's part-time, if you might have rental properties, you've got rental income, there are ways to get around that. But for the vast majority of people, if there's no income, downsizing is a very difficult thing to do, because it's chicken and the egg. You can't move until you've sold the family home. It's really difficult.
I think you also made a really good point earlier when you said she's 47, which I'm sure it does feel like the deadline is coming up. And I think it's great that she's looking at this and taking this seriously. But at the same time, you know, that there is time there. So if there's anyone who's listening to this and is also feeling a little bit behind, a little bit stressed, what would be something that you would say to them, and what would be some ways that they could take control of that situation?
I think once you've done your budget, you're probably going to find out there is a little bit of income that maybe you can save. know, we all have discretionary spending that once we write it down, we go, holy hell, like I didn't realize I was spending, yeah, $120 a week on lunches and coffees. But actually, by the time you sit down and work all that out, you know, it's probably not far off for a lot of people. Now, I'm not saying you need to start taking a packed lunch to work 5 days a week and, you know, only having the instant coffee out of the work kitchen. You need to live, but there is the ability for most people, if they really challenge themselves around it, they probably can contribute a bit more into the super fund. Then have a conversation with your employer. Is there any benefits? If you start putting more in, will your employer do any matching? Some companies will do that.
Some do more than the minimum. It's really worth checking.
It's absolutely worth having a look because it's for savings. Once it's in there, it's quite hard to access. It compounds. So once it's in, that's going to work for you. The smallest amount today, like the younger you are and the smaller amount you start putting in, by the time you get to retirement age, that's going to be meaningful. I do have a caveat to that, which is if you've got a substantial mortgage, does it make sense to be putting money into super where you're going to earn, you know, the prevailing rate of the day versus you've got, you know, $500,000-$600,000 home loans still that you're paying 4-5% on? You've got to work out and go, am I better off to, you know, aggressively clear my debt as quickly as I can, and then in the last 10 years before I retire, aggressively start putting into super? Again, it depends on your circumstances, and that's why you need a financial advisor, because the chance of you being able trying to work that out on your own.
A lot of number crunching.
It is. And again, we don't do this for a living. We need people to help us.
Yeah, nice. Great points there. Thank you so much. Will White from Heartland Bank. Now, if you have more questions for us, send them through. It's ask@francescook.co.nz. You can send us those questions and we will rip into them, get under the surface of it. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.